Welcome to The Greek Current, a podcast by Halk and Kathimerini. I'm your host, Thanos Davelis. Turkey's President Erdogan and Russia's President Putin met this week in Kazakhstan, where Putin floated a proposal to turn Turkey into an energy hub that could feed Europe with Russian gas. On Friday, Erdogan gave the project the green light, saying that Turkey and Russia had instructed their respective energy authorities to immediately begin technical work on this proposal. The proposal raises concerns, however, that Turkey will become even more dependent on Russia. Expert Sinan Giri joins me to discuss this latest proposal to turn Turkey into an energy hub for Russian gas to Europe, look into why Erdogan and Putin, who have met quite a few times since Russia's invasion of Ukraine, seem to need each other, and break down how this partnership is viewed in D.C. Sinan Giri is a non-resident senior fellow at the Foundation for Defensive Democracies, where he contributes to FDD's Turkey Program and Center on Military and Political Power. He's also an associate professor of security studies at the Command and Staff College Marine Corps University and Georgetown University's School of Foreign Service. Sinan, welcome back on The Greek Current.
Good to be back with you, Thanos.
Sinan, what's your initial take on this new Russian proposal to turn Turkey into an energy hub for Russian gas, which it seems that Erdogan is apparently on board with?
So it seems that both leaders have given this some amount of thought and they've now decided to go public with it. I've obviously thought this was relatively alluring for Erdogan, who has made a sort of mission to ensure that Turkey does not take sufficient punitive action against the Russian Federation, thereby to be cut off from Russian gas supplies, as with many Western European countries, with the shutting down of Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2. And so this essentially guarantees one aspect of that, that Turkey gets the gas. But more importantly, obviously, which the announcement came, is essentially that Turkey is intended to become a recipient of natural Russian gas that will serve as a hub that will then distribute it to the rest of Europe. And that would also obviously increase Turkey's prominence in a variety of ways, because essentially it would intend Europe to become a little bit more dependent and cordial towards Turkey in its pursuit for natural gas reserves, which obviously it lacks. It does seem a little strange at the outset, though. Let's assume that both presidents who have now given the sort of green light to explore this idea further, let's say that this does sort of get further authorization. The problem is, I think, is, well, what happens if Turkey does start sort of supplying that gas or become the recipient of that gas? Why would the European Union or Europe buy this gas from Turkey? Because at this present time, regardless of where Russian gas comes from, it is Russian gas. And there are international sanctions and measures against acquiring this from Russian sources. What would a diversion through Turkey mean, other than European governments at this present time would just say, well, that's nice, but we still can't buy it. So that's my initial thought. The other thought that I had that came out of this is the present infrastructure. To what extent is Turkey in a position to be able to receive substantial amounts of natural gas through its existing Blue Stream pipeline that comes under the Black Sea? Does it have enough capacity that would essentially be able to route it to European sources? So we're probably looking at essentially more infrastructure in terms of storage, in terms of pipelining that doesn't exist. So this is not something that becomes immediate, but it is a good headline for both presidents.
Sinan, with moves like this, are you concerned that Erdogan is moving Turkey to become more and more dependent on Russia?
I think that's definitely a concern that observers of Turkey should have. I mean, the Russian Federation under Putin already has a considerable chokehold on Turkey for the last number of years, especially since Turkey acquired the S-400 missile defense system. But this chokehold does not essentially come off easily. And this is partially, or I would say, the main reason why Erdogan does not consider further punitive actions against the Russians in their quest to conquer Ukraine, simply because if Turkey implemented the full barrage of international sanctions and measures against the Russian Federation, then it would run up against a serious problem of punitive Russian action, such as the halting of Turkish agricultural imports from Turkey, cutting off of gas supplies, if that could be the case, or tourism revenues. And Putin did this actually back in November 2015 for a period of 6 months after the Turks shot down a Russian fighter jet over Turkish airspace. And the resulting impact of Russian sanctions and measures against Turkey contracted the country's GDP by close to 0.5%. So if Erdogan does go through, and let's say they do sign an agreement and that pipeline and gas recipients sort of deal becomes more formalized, and we see pipelining and actually Turkey really transitioning to become a gas hub, the problem then becomes, well, that's an additional leverage that Putin has over Turkey. And it would be hard to walk back from that. And so, yes, it is concerning.
Erdogan and Putin have met quite a few times since Russia invaded Ukraine, and He was one of the few leaders to recently wish Putin happy birthday. At the same time, we're seeing Russia invest more and more in Turkey, as you've laid out. What's drawing these two leaders together here?
I think one of the sort of undertones that we may be missing, but worth highlighting, is the increasing amount of desperacy that we're seeing, especially on the part of Putin, in his quest to sort of prevail and save face, given his disastrous military campaign and invasion of Ukraine, right? And things are not going well for him. Several generals have been fired. But more than saving face, Russia does have an issue of a currency problem, right? This war is extremely costly on the Russian economy. Business elites and circles in Russia have signaled their dismay towards Putin to sort of double down and try to annex parts of it when the military outcome is at best for Russia more than uncertain. So they're predicting Russian business circles as well as followers of Putin are basically concerned that there could be a liquidity crunch going forward because, yes, the Russians can and do export their fossil fuels to a handful of countries, but that's the problem. It's a handful of countries. I don't think Putin expected that Europe and NATO would have so much resolve to essentially stop purchasing their fossil fuels. And there's no guarantee that that will be upheld in the future. But at present, I think they're trying to bank on the notion that Russia does need consistent and increasing amounts of hard currency to be able to finance not just the war, but just to keep the lights on in Russia in the next several sort of years going forward, depending on how embedded this conflict becomes. Obviously, for Erdogan, it's also just about staying relevant. I think it's less about Erdogan looking desperate. He has made sort of hay out of broadcasting, saying to the Europeans, well, at least we will not freeze this winter and future winters, given that we will have adequate access to natural gas supplies, and sort of facetiously said that Europeans are welcome to Turkey in the winter to come and stay and ride out the cold winter because Turkey will have an ample amount of sources of gas. So it's more about sort of leverage and keeping himself relevant vis-a-vis Turkey's suspicious and beleaguered Western partners, just to say, you can't write me off yet. And basically, you do have to accommodate and put up with me, mainly because I am balancing a very fine walking act with Vladimir Putin.
An article in The Economist recently made the argument that Erdogan, who faces elections next year, may need Russia's help to hold on to power. Is this an angle as well that we should be considering?
I mean, it's hard to say at this point in time. I think that, you know, Erdogan's doing just fine in his re-election prospects, not because he is presenting a bold and sort of sellable vision of a Turkey, which he is not. I mean, after 20 years, he's looking pretty frail. He has no new policies. He is unable to convince voters by any sort of perspective that any promise that he makes is just not going to be believed because they would just ask, well, why haven't you already done this? So just from his personal standing, he just doesn't look that great. But his greatest advantage going forward right now into the election cycle in Turkey is just the utter and sheer incompetence of Turkey's political opposition, who are trying to calculate spoils and divisions of government agencies as well as portfolios, assuming that they're just going to win and walk into an election day and just win it. We don't even have a credible candidate yet. So that's one thing to bear in mind. As far as where Russia factors into this, the most important thing that I have in mind is I see Putin as a kind of backup failsafe or an ancillary sort of generator for Erdogan's re-election prospects. Any amount of disinformation, any amount of sort of election meddling with social media sources, delegitimization of opposition characters, if that should become necessary, as Putin meddled with the United States presidential elections in previous years, I think that's what Erdogan could be sort of relying on if necessary. But at this point, I think he's doing just fine.
Sinan, we're speaking to you while you're in Washington, D.C. How is this bromance between Erdogan and Putin and this latest meeting in Kazakhstan and the energy deal viewed at Foggy Bottom in the White House and on Capitol Hill?
That's a good question. So, you know, just looking at recent conversations in the Capitol area between different agencies as well as sort of government personnel, it's continued bewilderment and frustration. I think those are the two adjectives that I could employ here. Turkey is essentially coming to the realization that without significant sort of backtracking on certain key US and European asks, mainly in the realm of S-400s, mainly in the realm of reducing antagonisms towards Greece and Cyprus in the Eastern Mediterranean, then there will be no essential movement on these key Turkish asks. I think across the US government, these are being put fairly clearly at the Turkish sort of counterparts. You know, this frustrates them. But this is why essentially Erdogan then shows his other hand on the world stage by cozying up towards Putin and taking all these quite shocking photos with the Shanghai Cooperation Organization members, seeming to sort of be very charming and cuddly with them, just so he can say, well, if you are not going to deal with me, here are some of the problems I can cause by essentially cozying up to some of these more unsavory regimes. So I think the intent of the US government has been communicated quite well. I think they have an understanding of why the US is going to hold out between the White House as well as the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and other actors in Washington. It's just not altogether clear how much Erdogan wants to push this issue.
Sinan, thanks for joining us again on The Greek Current. Great chatting with you.
Thanks for having me again. Thank you.
In other news, natural gas from deposits in the Eastern Mediterranean can help replace gas from Russia as Europe also looks to make a quick transition to renewable energy, the EU's energy commissioner said on Friday. Commissioner Kadri Simson told the East Mediterranean Gas Forum conference in Cyprus that the region can play an increasingly important role as a short to medium-term supplier of gas. Simson noted that the only lasting solution, however, is a speedy transition to renewables, highlighting that the region has a high potential to generate renewable hydrogen. President Nikos Anastasiadis also hailed the start to work to build a 2,000-megawatt undersea electricity cable that will link the power grids of Israel, Cyprus, and Greece. Finally, Turkey has passed a sweeping law on disinformation that critics say will further restrict criticism of President Erdogan and his government in the run-up to elections. The bill, which was approved by the Turkish parliament late on Thursday, has drawn criticism from across Turkish society. The new law would see those accused of spreading disinformation jailed for up to 3 years. A group of 25 international press freedom groups warned in a joint statement published that the law will lead to extensive censorship and self-censorship and enable the government to further subdue and control public debate. That wraps up today's episode of The Greek Current. Thanks for tuning in.